The Jazz Scene Podcast gives an in-depth look at the lives and stories of the musicians performing in Columbus and beyond. This episode features local pianist Tony Haygood. The Tony Haygood Trio will perform a free concert at the Long Street Studio on November 1st at 8 p.m. for our Community Jazz Series. Today's episode is hosted by Alex Burgoyne, Director of Production for the Jazz Arts Group of Columbus.
Welcome to the Jazz Scene Podcast. We have Tony Haygood here today. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Are you from Columbus originally?
Yeah, pretty much. I grew up in Westerville,
okay,
which is a suburb just northeast of Columbus. But I've lived in Upper Arlington, live in Reynoldsburg now, so been a Columbus native most of my life.
Do you have, I'm remembering something about piano lineage from that area. Do you have like a special teacher? I can't remember what your story
is. Yeah, I grew up with Betty Mabon was my teacher. Okay. She's since retired, and I actually got to play in the assisted living community where she lives now for an event, and she told all of her, you know, friends and family that were there about how great I was and how I was her student and everything. But yeah, I studied with her. That's where I got my kind of basic skills and learned a lot of what I know today.
So, cool.
Yeah.
And sorry, I didn't mention this early. Tony is a piano player. Do you play any other instruments, Tony?
I've been known to pick up the melodica every once
okay.
in a while,
great.
But that's pretty much all I do. I do some background vocal recording, especially like making practice tracks and things like that. But yeah, I'm definitely just mainly a piano player.
And you're a pretty big wizard on the arranging composing side of things too, right?
Yeah, for a lot of the concert series that we do, I write a lot of the arrangements. Sometimes transcribe some of the arrangements. We just did our Nat King Cole concert, which was a lot of fun, and hearing those, because you can't get those charts a lot of different places. You either have to pay to rent them, which is an exorbitant amount
of
money,
right.
So I have found out, or you transcribe them. So I was able to transcribe a couple of them and made some new arrangements of my own. And that's what I do for a lot of the concerts that I've done for the last 5, 6, 7 years now.
Yeah, that kind of skill set, too, is like something like our teachers, I feel like, were like, this will do you good, even though it's miserable and it takes forever.
I remember them teaching us all about notation software and like, when am I going to use this? And I use it all
just
the time.
Just every day of your life. Yeah. So you started in Westerville. You ended up at Capitol. We were classmates together.
Yeah.
Was there anybody there in particular who was like a special influence, somebody who like kind of you can attribute some of your success to?
Yeah, a lot of the staff at Capitol is really great, but of course, I went to Capitol to study with my mentor, who has now passed away, Mark Pflugi, and he was a big influence on me and started taking lessons with him, I think junior year in high school. In fact, I had auditioned for the Columbus Youth Jazz Orchestra and didn't make it in because back then there was only one band and mm-hmm. Kenny Banks Jr. was in town, which, you know, great.
Inconvenient.
Great, right. Yeah. But I love what you guys have done now, too, because it gives so many other musicians like me opportunities. You have so many different bands and so many different configurations now. So I've loved to see from afar how the program has continued to develop and evolve.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Yeah, I also didn't get my shot in the youth jazz band. Cool. So Pflugi, anybody in your family musical? Do you have any family musical influence?
So my parents aren't really that musical. I mean, my mom played guitar, but she doesn't play anymore. My dad did a couple like productions in high school, I think. But my grandma had a lot of musical talent, and she would play by ear. She had one of those like electric two manual organs,
okay.
Just really small, you know, not a B3 or anything like that, just a really small compact organ console. And we would go and kind of bang on it when we were kids, and there was a percussion setting that you could do, and we would mess around with the percussion a bunch. But she would always just sit down and kind of sound out a song or two, and she liked a lot of these polkas and you know, things that people from that generation kind of gravitate towards.
Sure.
So I would say if I got it from any family stuff, maybe it was my interactions with her and just her talent. But I also wonder too, on my dad and mom's side, they grew up pretty poor, so I don't know if maybe there was talent, but they just didn't have the opportunity to develop that talent. Like, you know, a lot of people, unfortunately, don't have that opportunity. So I'm just thankful that I had that opportunity growing up, and that I've been able to develop into what I do now.
Yeah. Is there a place where you can point at that is like where the bug started for you?
It was probably like second grade. My dad had gotten this Casio keyboard. And back then, I use a Casio today because they're lightweight and sound great, triple action sensor, everything. But back then, they were like these tiny keys. It wasn't a full-size keyboard at all. It was probably just like a student desk width. And my fingers were tiny back then, so they fit in the keys. But they definitely wouldn't now. And I would just take that, you could put batteries in, I'd sit in the chair and I'd pick out Twinkle Twinkle Little Star, Mary Had a Little Lamb, and just keep playing around with it over and over, and they'd have to like put it away because they were tired of me messing with it. And maybe like, I don't know, 6 months, 9, 12 months later, we found Betty Mabon, and I started taking piano lessons with her basically through high school, and developing kind of that natural curiosity.
Was jazz a part of the thing that you wanted from early, or did that come later?
It came a little later. I was always big into improvisation and trying to hear and play things. Eventually became a good reader, but same Betty Mabon, there was a Alfred, was it Alfred? No, it was Faber Books series called Jazz and Rags. I think they've changed the name of it since then. But I started playing, and it was Bye Bye Blackbird was my first tune in that book. And I had kind of like stalled out a little bit at that point in my life, maybe third or fourth grade. I liked to...
Most third and fourth graders do.
You know? Like to play the things that I like to play and wasn't really working as hard toward the stuff in the book that I really needed to learn. And yeah, like, you know, some of my students are the same way. But she brought out that book because she would always have a couple of different books and we just try something every once in a while, which I really appreciated about her. And all of a sudden I'm like, I like this song a lot. So I learned it and came back to the lesson, had the whole thing learned. We would do like segments of songs instead of the whole, but I had it completely learned for the next lesson. That's kind of like the pivotal moment mm-hmm. when looking back on it now, I'm like, ah, that was.
Something clicked right there.
Yeah, exactly.
I love that. Okay, hard right turn. You do so much different kind of performing. You perform with string ensembles and saxophone players and all these different kinds of things, lots of solo piano. Do you have a way to describe Tony style in like a subgenre kind of a way or whatever?
Not necessarily. Nancy Wilson? I can't remember exactly who it was that would never say that they were a jazz singer. You know, they specifically shied away from that. I'm not like that. You know, I'm definitely a jazz pianist, but I'm also a classical pianist and a top 40s pianist and everything. And I think that comes from something that I learned from Mark. He had on his website that he was a melodic player and he focused on the music. And we would talk about that sometimes in lessons, about, you know, losing ego and just connecting to the music, doing what the music wants you to do and needs you to do, not worrying about what somebody else is doing or being jealous of it or letting it affect you in a negative way, using it to inspire you and be true to the music. So, well, I definitely play a lot of jazz and play a lot of other genres. You know, I wouldn't say that I'm Tony's style is neo-jazz or anything like that.
Sure.
It's just everything.
Try to do it all. Yeah. That's definitely something I would attribute to Mark, so that makes a lot of sense coming from you. You have this performance coming up on the 1st, which is a week from...
Tomorrow,
yes, right. Probably more like a couple days from now when this podcast comes out, right?
Sure.
What are you most excited about for the performance? You're bringing a trio, right?
So yeah.
You and a couple other people, yeah.
Yeah, it's going to Jerry Powell on drums and Bradley Millen on bass. That's going to be a lot of fun. I'm super excited about this kind of new space. I've played there a couple of times with other groups, but never myself. So that'll be really fun to bring my group in there and do kind of some of the things that we have planned. I'm also excited to connect with some of the Jazz Arts Group audience a little bit more. We've done the PBJ and Jazz thing with Zach's band in the end of spring, whenever it was.
Yeah, sure.
And yes, it's just always great to kind of try to expand out and connect with more people and play in different spaces. Sometimes I find that's where the most motivation and curiosity, other adjective I can't think of, really strongly come and strive.
Yeah, sure. Love that. Yeah, it's like being in a new space is like a new, it's like a fourth person in your band,
yeah,
almost. Yeah, for sure. You often have themes for your performances. Anything resembling a theme for this upcoming thing?
Not if there was a theme, it's like the Tony Haga Trio favorites.
Yeah, great. Okay.
Because we've kind of developed a lot of arrangements over the last 15 years or so of standards and not so standards, and they're really interesting and fun and exciting arrangements. One of the things we did a survey at our last concert. And one of the things that people keep writing in the surveys is exciting and exhilarating. So we're trying to mix it up while still serving the music and balancing, you know, being entertaining with, you know, being true musicians. And so, yeah, it's our favorite hits.
Great. Love that. Okay. So you're around all over the place. You do some choir accompanying. You do some... like instrumental accompanying, you do all kinds of stuff. Do you have any favorite places to play, like venues or favorite audiences, like nursing homes or whatever? You play at the Mac quite a bit. You play at the museum. Anything you like best or especially?
I think like the more focused performances, it's more about the performance and less about the location, as well as the instrument. It's definitely more about the instrument. So I love the museum's piano. It's an extra bonus point because it's been dedicated to Mark's memory, and of course he's the one that started the series there. So since we've kind of continued it in his memory and in Richard's memory, who had also taken up the series after Mark, it's great to play there on that piano. And there's just kind of an excitement and an energy from all of the art that's surrounding you and all of the exhibits that they bring in. But playing on the Southern stage, you know, with the CJO a couple of years ago, that was, oh man, that was such a great experience. And Byron brought me over to Pittsburgh to play with the Pittsburgh Symphony. Huge concert hall, the Heinz Hall over there. Beautiful piano. And the reaction from the audience with the, he had me do a, it was a cadenza, there we go. He had me do this cadenza, and I got done, and the band continued on, and there's thunderous applause that I was not expecting, and honestly kind of made my rest of my year when that happened. And, like, people stopped me as I was going to the parking garage. Like, I didn't think anybody would remember who I was, and people were stopping me. I'm like, man, you're such a great pianist. And just those experiences, having the opportunity to do those types of things, really are what I remember and what I like the most. So, hey, Pittsburgh Symphony and Heinz Hall, you want to have me back? Or, you know, next time Bobby's out, you know, give me a call, come on, this jazz orchestra.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's just amazing.
I think people who aren't musicians don't realize that, like, you play hundreds of times a year, and it's those little moments that you're like, that is what fuels like practice sessions late at night and all this arranging work. And it's like all these magical like 10 seconds of your life that it's kind of like an upsetting thing to learn.
But. Right. Well, and somebody had said something about, you know, the if people knew how often musicians were rejected and how they just have to keep getting back up and trying again and trying again, whether it's for a gig or for an orchestra audition or playing for a college or teaching or any of those types of things, you're exactly right. So I was just doing the numbers the other day from last year, and I did about 300 performances last year. And I love performing, so whether it's we do a lot of assisted living performances, like you said, playing for high schools and colleges and Otterbein University where I'm a staff pianist, that's all really great, and sometimes you get the goosebumps. But I find as I'm maybe getting older, the goosebump moments don't happen quite as often. Yeah. So then when you get the next level of goosebumps and something like that happens where you're filling in last minute and get the call and you're going in the rehearsals the day of and the concerts and 3 hours after the rehearsal, and then there's just that appreciation and love and recognition, it's just, you're right, it's the fuel to keep you going.
Yeah. Is there anything inside that you could like pass on to students kind of coming up, whether it's inside the realm of performing or otherwise, like advice you have?
Yeah, just keep going, practice your instrument, try to find a way to make it fun and to be engaged. There's definitely, and we still get students with my music lessons company, Noteworthy Music. We get students that come in and they're just expecting instant gratification and don't get it, and then just ready to throw in the towel. You know, find ways to make it fun, practice differently. But also try to find people to play for. You don't have to be a professional musician to go play an assisted living place. Those, you know, elderly people most of the time would love to have, especially a younger student there playing, and we bring some of our students there for our recitals. Mm-hmm. Because they just really enjoy, and they can, honestly, they can play all of the wrong notes and with horrible rhythm, and they just have a smile on their face the whole time. So
there's something magic about assisted living facilities because those are the songs. They're their songs.
Yeah.
So you're playing all these songs that just feel like jazz standards, but they were like their pop tunes.
Right.
Pretty cool.
Right, yeah.
Where can we listen to your music? What else do you have upcoming? Where can we see you?
Yeah, so definitely go to tonyhaygood.com, H-A-G-O-O-D. I try to keep my calendar updated there, and we've got all of our lists of performances. I have a couple of sample videos and audio excerpts. And this year, I was actually supposed to make an album, but the Columbus Symphony called, and then, you know, the New Albany Symphony called, and it just got a little too chaotic. And everybody else's schedule then filled up, so we didn't get it done this year, but it's on the list, because we've got a lot of great ideas and a lot of great arrangements that we want to get recorded. We just have to find the time. So be on the lookout for that in 2024, fingers crossed, knock on wood.
Amen. Okay, Tony, thank you so much for chatting today. Join us at Longstreet Studio November 1st at 8 o'clock. We'll be joined with Tony Haygood's trio featuring Jerry Powell and Bradley Mellon. See you there. Thanks so much.
Thank you for having me. This has been great.
Cheers.
The Jazz Scene is presented by Jazz Arts Group of Columbus, America's oldest nonprofit organization dedicated to advancing the art of jazz. This episode was hosted by Alex Burgoyne and produced and engineered by Mercedes Aviles. Subscribe to The Jazz Scene wherever you get your podcasts.